Okay, here we are on tape two on the development of the psyche information. And we were just finishing up on the other tape, and I was just beginning to talk about how certain kinds of thinking leads to disease, breakdowns, closed-mindedness, and so forth like that. But there is some good news. So far I've talked about a lot of the problems you can have, because if we don't identify the problems, we don't really know how we're going to affect a solution. But there's some good news to the idea that anyone can be helped to some degree. Even if their mind is filled with all sorts of troubles, their thinking's illogical and so forth, anybody can pull it out. It just may take more work for us, some people than others. All he really needs to pull it out is a slow, systematic system of finding new knowledge, building security, and the recognition that it's truly possible. These are very important factors. I'm going to go over that again. First thing to do is we need to find the knowledge, get access to the knowledge, new knowledge that's going to replace the old. If we currently have a head full of stuff that's just way off track, of course, most of us get pretty closed-minded when we think we're being attacked, you know, if somebody thinks we're crazy or sick, and we hang on to stuff. But if you're really serious about growth and trying to do something with yourself, you'll seek out new knowledge. You'll listen to new ideas and find ways of replacing the old knowledge. There also has to be a certain security involved here in knowing what you're doing, that you're okay, that, you know, that things can get better, and the recognition that it's really possible to do that. The recognition that it's really possible to do that can very simply come through just the meditation, immersion exercises that we were talking about earlier. Any sort of technique that starts to associate the different parts of the brain and self to the individual. The drawing we have of the little head with the material and the spiritual on it, well, it's necessary that you start identifying each one of those areas. We know what our conscious mind is. That's what we use all the time. You need to find your subconscious mind and learn to identify the feeling so you know where it's at. And you need to, you know that it's in there and what it does. You need to understand what your psyche is, that it is a collection of your feelings and thinking and thoughts. It's who you are, basically. It's your persona. You need to discover that you are a spiritual self also. That's harder to do. You have to start practicing exercises through meditation to that point where you can actually feel creation, that little touch of eternity that Billy was allowed to touch when he was on the Great Spacer ship that we've talked about. You need to find out, if you can develop it long enough, that on the spiritual side we have what's called the we form, the spiritual telepathy, so you can start getting in touch even with other life forms, develop your own keys like we talked about earlier, and get into your own Akashic records, studying perhaps your past life and traumas which are making up your present self. Quite often we carry forward trauma from previous lives which we're not aware is influencing who we are today. And if you feel that there's something in there, if there's obviously something about your character or personality which is preventing you from success, it may lie in these areas. Fortunately, most of the time, it's nothing more than just not having the tools, the right equipment, the right understanding of how to develop force of thought, how to start controlling our own thinking. I mean, life is really simply nothing more than just how you think. That's all it really is. So, what we need to do if someone in that particular area where they need development, they're having problems getting going, we just need to give them a push in the right direction. And that, of course, is the purpose and the reason why I make tapes on this type of information. Some of the things I say may be helpful, some of them you might not have any use for. It's like any other information. But you need to find the things in here that are relevant for you and put them to use. If there are certain things that I say, certain passages that I comment on, certain ideas that I bring up, that ring a bell, that ring truth with you, wear that tape out. Go over and over it again and again. Order a new one if you need to. Make a copy. But do whatever it takes to go over and over it until it makes sense to you and it provides you the answers that you need. So that's what I mean about pushing someone in the right direction or being an inspiration. Because you have to heal yourself. You have to fix yourself. Someone else can only give you the guidelines by which to do it. We can only feed you the knowledge. I can be an inspiration, perhaps, and other people can be an inspiration to people by virtue of their own successes in life, by virtue of their own mental balance. Perhaps their clarity of thought is what you're looking for. Or maybe it's just a few pieces of information that you need to go on with your own path. So whatever it is, take it from someone else, but don't look to someone else as your mentor, your teacher, your guide, or put any responsibility on that other person for taking care of your problems. We all solve our own problems ourselves. I don't believe at all in anybody else leading us, guiding us, or taking us through life. We are here to share, but we got to define these terms properly. We share and help one another, but the responsibility is where we get into trouble. Someone else is not responsible for your life. It's not a God, an angel, a guide, or anybody else. They don't run your life for you. They are not there to do that. It is your responsibility to learn from the inspiration of these people, take the information, and develop yourself. Most importantly, the main reason is, if you don't learn it yourself, if you don't figure it out step by step and make it part of your life, it doesn't stick. It doesn't become part of yourself. You don't really change. And it doesn't become part of your spirit. There will be no spiritual growth unless you earn it and make it part of yourself. So you have to do that. You can't just take advice from someone else and figure that, okay, I got the advice, all right, I'm going to be different from now on. That's only the beginning. Any information, be it advice, a book, tape, film, whatever it is wisdom that makes sense to you, hopefully, that you can use for your own personal growth. Okay? It's because once a person knows with certainty that he can take control of the path of his own life, his character and his destiny once again rise into being a happy individual. Hope springs eternal. How often have you heard that? Hope springs eternal. It's great. Once you know something's going to work, if you got any new plan in life, all right, anything you're going to start on, maybe it's a new job, a new career, a new romance, whatever it's going to be, my, do we get excited. Remember the last time you met somebody brand new and that spark happened and you were just off the ground for a few days, you know, you're in love and your feet don't touch the floor for about every 10 feet? You know, we just feel marvelous, don't we? Well, that's because there's great hope in the idea that we're about to achieve great happiness, isn't there? Most of life is pleasure or pain. We're either looking for it or running from it all the time. So, you know, be aware of that, work around that, and strive to be happy, as it says. Tolstoy said, the human lives of his spirit and not of the body. When he knows that and does not devote his life to the body, but devotes it to the spirit, then you can put him in chains and lock him behind bars, but he will always be free. That's a pretty easy thing to understand. Once you are certain about your spirit and you have that reliance and confidence of self, it doesn't make a whole lot of difference what kind of turmoil is going on in the material world around you. You can still be that beaming light, that inspirational force that moves through life, creating your own path and being happy. Here's a new idea for you. During our physical life term, the material body serves as a dwelling place for the spirit. Now, most of us in the New World or New Age community are going to agree with that, but if you really thought about it a lot, the dwelling place for the spirit. Where is your spirit? Is it in your foot, your hand, your elbow? Have you ever thought about where it is? Have you ever thought of what it might look like? Have you ever considered what your life force might be? Our bodies are electric. There's a pulsing energy that moves through a body that activates all of our little connectors in our brain, which causes all the chemicals to run through our body and keep it going and performing. Have you ever really tried to meditate on the idea of what a spirit might be? If you really are, if all of us really are spiritual beings, then how come we're not more aware of it? Well, go looking for that. You know, that doesn't mean it's not there, but ask yourself these questions sometimes and in your meditations and so forth. Go looking for the answers that yourself and you'll find them. Through thinking, our character, the path of our very life, and the spiritual development are engraved. And engraved or imprinted is a good word here. I've been talking a lot about how we build up the force and we add things to our spiritual self. We do this through finding new knowledge and making sure that it's exactly right. Get things exactly right before we allow it to become part of ourself. Because when we do that, when we bring some new knowledge into our life, research it well. Look at it like you're doing the term paper of your life before you add things to yourself. That's why most of the time we read a book, we just kind of dash across it and go, okay. And we kind of put it in temporary memory. We don't make it part of ourselves because subconsciously we don't have enough information on those ideas yet sometimes to really add it to ourselves, to make an imprint, an impression on our spiritual self. But there'll be a certain point where we've got enough facts about something where it starts to move us and it becomes part of us, and then it makes the material subconscious mind then offers it, so to speak, to the spiritual subconscious mind, your spiritual self over there. It receives the information, and if it's correct, if it's become part of you, it now accepts it. And now that makes a permanent imprint on your spiritual self. And your spiritual self, being the place where all of your accumulated wisdom from lifetimes reside, now moves forward. You've added something to the spiritual energy that not only created your material life, but the one before you, the one before that, when there was a different personality, five lifetimes back when it was Larry or Bob or Nancy or whatever. And it will also be there for the next material life that some new persona, personality, will be using, which is you under a new personality. Think about that for a while. You, in other words, what you think and so forth becomes a permanent record, you know, not for yourself and for those that are going to go beyond you, and it adds things to the universe itself. Your thoughts don't stop at your ears. They go out into the universe. And depending on if they're thoughts from the material conscious, they're short range on the planet. If they are spiritual thoughts coming from your spiritual self, they almost know no bounds at all, and they race literally through the universe on their own. So we do make and engrave ideas into our spiritual self. We want to be cautious of that. The power of thought first forms, when it's first forming, when we come into the life and so forth, and when we're children, the power of our thoughts first form in ideas of good and evil, or good and bad. And then a will is imprinted and built up inside of our spirit about this is a good thing, that's a bad thing, and so forth. That's where it starts, when we start adding things to our psyche and to our spiritual self when we're young. This creates a will, and there's kind of an agreement then, a type of thinking between the spiritual self and the material self, and it starts deciding, well, this is a good thing, and that's a bad thing, and this is evil, and that's whatever, you know. Seen in logical order, first, the activity of thoughts must be installed before a will can be built up and imprinted for a deed to be accomplished. That means first you have a lot of little thoughts, and as you're accumulating information about something and forming all of your little thoughts, as you keep thinking about a subject, it builds up, it concentrates, and then it begins to be a force within you. It's just like my simple analogy earlier of the woman going shopping. All week long she's thinking about buying those shoes, and by Friday she is into it, and Saturday she is off to the mall. She put a lot of energy into that. Well, the same type of process works when you start putting information in yourself. You build up a will about something. You develop an overall approach to life, an attitude that you use to go through life. And that's done with all these little thoughts that we feed ourselves. Once there is imprinted in the spiritual will, a deed is possible. A newborn baby can't make a decision on buying a new car, has absolutely no information about that. But as he grows up and learns about different things and knowledges, eventually someday he will have enough knowledges which will allow him to make a good decision on buying a car, we hope. Okay? Well, without the knowledge, without all the little thoughts, the will would have never, you know, grown up. If a person has to go buy a car and knows nothing about it, then they have to make the decision based on other factors. If they first study and learn all about cars and so forth, and they make a much more logical decision and a better buying decision when they go to get it, right? So, very simply, get educated before you start feeding things to yourself. Be careful what you feed your spirit. Most importantly in this new age, be careful with some of the information that's flying around. People are making all sorts of claims these days about this, that, and the other, and quite a bit of it I don't believe at all. There are very few people in the New Age community, I think, that are really on target that are saying it correctly. Now, I know most of them mean well, and a lot of them are my friends, but that doesn't mean that I agree with them. I think too often people get overexcited to say, to be, to express, or whatever, without clearly thinking through what they're really doing to themselves and the people around them. Thoughts, remember, also put will in motion. When you've made a lot of small thoughts and created this strong will, this attitude about something, then from that point on it's easily triggered. It is not true that the will puts thoughts into action. It's the other way around. Once you have a will built up within yourself, this collection of knowledge about something, so then you form an attitude about something. That's what a will is. At that point, all it takes to trigger it, to bring it to the forward, is a thought. A thought that deals with that information, and wham, all of your feelings and thoughts run to the forefront, your opinions about how you're going to react to something, right? We do that all the time. You know, advertising does that to us. We just finished up an election for a new president, and most all of us noticed, I think, in this ugly political year, how the parties and the advertising companies were trying so hard to control our votes through the use of negative advertising controls with fear and so forth. They would tell us any sort of crap on there, make up any sort of thing, thinking that most people are going to be motivated to vote because of that. Well, they're triggering the things that are in us. They realize that we are a society that's very sensitive to prejudice, to anger, to value judgments. All they have to do is tell you something nasty about a person, whether it's true or not, and it triggers something in you, some feeling of righteousness that, I'm not voting for that guy if he did that. Well, they rely upon that. Well, don't be fooled so easily. They may have lied to you. And they may have lied to you on purpose, knowing full well how easily you can be triggered with a simple thought, and your entire will then race to the forefront and do a predictable thing. Don't be so predictable. Learn to stay right in balance with yourself so you're not so easily controlled by outside influences. The power which the thoughts use as a stimulus does not originate from man. Now, here's another big idea for you to chew on. When you call upon your spiritual self to actually do something, it's not entirely just from yourself. The amazing part about the spirit is that it is connected actually to creation. What happens is when you have an idea about something and you allow your spiritual self to come forward to actually respond to something new in life or whatever, you know, deed or action you're about to do, if you allow yourself to bring forward your reaction to this new deed from your spirit, what also happens is the power from that spirit, but it flows into your spirit from the immeasurable expanse of all of the universe. In other words, there is a consciousness throughout the universe of higher life forms and lesser life forms. Higher life forms project much more knowledge, of course, than the lower life forms. But out in the universe, within creation itself, there is a consciousness, and your spiritual self draws off of that. It is connected to it all the time because it is a part piece of it. Our spirit selves are part of creation. They came from it. You were always connected to it. That's my point. The idea is then when you have a problem in life and you need to make a decision, you can use that. And you should know all the time that the force of the universe is available out there to you at any given time. An example would be Uri Geller, who quite often gives demonstrations of spoon bending and so forth before large crowds. Well, Uri Geller himself, at least in his early days, couldn't bend the spoon in the dressing room on his own. What he learned to do is he learned to bend the spoon using the consciousness, the power of consciousness, from the people in the audience. At a certain point, I think he developed on and found out that he could use his own spiritual self to draw off the powers of the universe. And this is what happened quite often with people who are psychic and so forth. They learn, or at least they are drawing off the power of the universe, whether they're aware of it or not. Once they become aware of it, they become even much more powerful. This stems from the vast spiritual abundance of what's called original life, is what Billy calls it. Original life, that's what's responsible for life in the entire universe. Original life is the phrase he uses that refers to the original life force that started the universe that we live in. This mysterious original life personifies the breath of life, which universally gives life to everything in the universe. It's in you. That's your life force that keeps you going. Your spiritual self is attached to that force and can be called upon for strength. It can be used for strength of character. It can be used to develop some of our more famous New Age ideas like telekinetic energies and levitation, telepathy. But most importantly, it gives you force of self, strength of conviction, self-reliance, confidence, abilities to see into the future, ability to always tap into the subconscious self, Imagine the ability at any given time to use your spirit to tap into a knowledge bank or a consciousness in the Akashic Records to know the answers to things at all times. Sometimes channelers tell us that they're hooked to a great knowledgeable being somewhere where information is just flowing into them. Now, as you know, I don't believe in channeling. I think it's the wrong way to actually use the mind. I believe that channeling is nothing more than euphoric meditation gone bad, that a person's own persona creates these things. Where I've seen some channelers, though, they get back on track and actually develop their spirit to the point where they use the spiritual we form that the Pleiadians talk about, that power of your spiritual self, which really is connected to the creation and the consciousness of the universe. It can also be used at all times to kind of keep an open line to the Akashic Records. After a certain period of development of meditation, it's possible to have that line open all the time, where you can call upon information from the Akashic or higher life forces to give you advice about perhaps most anything that you would want to know. Imagine being able to go through life and never really face a difficult problem because everything seems easy to you. It always goes your way. Well, certainly that can be developed. The force of your spirit can become so strong that you are always lucky. The force of your spirit can be developed so strong that you always have the ability to keep an open channel to a larger consciousness in the universe. That is certainly possible. Many people do it with nothing more than thinking properly, thinking in a balanced state of mind, and always thinking with the idea of a mind that they're doing things for the right reasons. Integrity of thought brings it forward. So, this mysterious original life that Billy's calling out here, this life force, that's part of the secret of creation. This is the part of thing man may never fully understand exactly how the creation operates, but now we know that it is there. We know there's a spiritual self there, and we're beginning to find out we're connected to it. And as you practice your exercises of meditation and meditation immersion, you too will feel it. You'll find it in yourself, your connection to it, and then there will be this great feeling of fulfillment and happiness to know that you really are a spiritual being and that you are connected to something much larger and greater than the simple material existence or the environment that you live in. Next thing I'd like to touch on, and something you've got to spend a little time dwelling on, is how we make ourselves sick through wrong thinking. Perhaps you've heard of late in the past few years, more and more people have come across the idea that how we think actually affects our body. Many doctors are getting onto that. I want to point out one little thing to you here for you to think about along these lines. If we allow ourselves to think improperly, we react to things with rage, anger, depression, and so forth. If we get ourselves out of control, let's say you're in a situation somewhere and something happens and it touches part of you that causes rage and anger and you want to strike out somehow and you feel suddenly the urge to either defend yourself in a situation or you feel such hate and anger you might actually pick up something and throw something at somebody. Now, of course, I'm only talking about individuals here which are prone to getting out of control, but we seem to have more and more of those in our society these days. But I use that as an example because I want to point out what happens inside the individual when that happens. While we're in these states of excitement, we promote an overstimulation of the adrenal glands. These are located right over the kidneys. Sometimes we call these the crazy glands. They discharge kind of a digestive matter and overflow the blood with the fighting strength, invigorating chemicals whenever the human prepares himself for some sort of alteration and you need extra strength. So adrenaline pumps into the blood and gets you going, but adrenaline is normally neutralized then. You know, when the anger calms down and you're trying to get yourself back together, well, there's kind of a calming acid solution, a milky acid solution that comes out from the muscles of the body. It soothes us and calms us down. But quite often it's not enough, and there's an extra adrenaline that's left in the body that causes like aggressiveness and this readiness to fight where you just can't calm down. Well, because normally the body is prepared for you to get a little angry and aggressive sometimes, so it can normally secrete this milky solution which will calm you down. But if you get too far out of control, my point is there's too much adrenaline in your blood and you can't calm it down and it has an effect then. Okay? This can create illness. Adrenaline is only neutralized then when the anger or the fighting is over, whatever's calling it. And then if this calming effect isn't strong enough, it lingers on in the body. What actually happens is that in your inner life, your inside self, your psyche, is living in such an uproar with anger and in turmoil, the muscles are unable to discharge enough of this milky acid solution to smooth out the human. The extra adrenaline causes aggressiveness. You had this tendency to fight. This has an adverse effect on us. Sometimes it'll make your stomach even contract. Your intestines and other organs and nerves have a disquieting effect inside and start reacting to all this extra adrenaline that's in your body. It causes a number of aomas. It'll cause nervous trembling. If you've ever even been like in a fist fight or something and got pushed into it somehow or whatever, you find yourself just trembling and out of control, that's what's going on. Headaches, dizzy spells, liver, kidney ailments, gallbladder problems. It can cause digestive troubles, ulcers, constipation, diarrhea, any number of sort of things. My point is that when we find ourselves living out of balance, not living spiritually, allowing ourselves to get carried away because of material aggression, problems, hate, anger, and so forth, that chemically we actually do damage our body. That since there is not enough calming acid secreted by the muscles, the extra adrenaline left over in the body gets into the blood and causes slowly these build up, these ailments. And for a person who regularly gets angry or hostile or violent, something like that, they're going to get sick. These are not going to be happy, long-living people. So it should be obvious that to avoid these many kinds of illnesses, we need to learn to control our thinking so we don't get caught up in these moods. A person who lives a spiritual life would never happen to. They would walk away from any situation like that, or they can very calmly look at a situation. Professional people learn this. If you find somebody in the professional walks of life who is continuously in front of the public or in dealing with crowds of different types and so forth, they learn to listen to information and let it kind of bounce off of them. They see it just exactly for what it is. I'm reminded of Ross Perot once, and he was on a Peter Jennings show, and he was attacked by several members of the audience with some very irrational statements that were obviously only being said out of hate and anger to try to hurt his feelings and make him look bad on television. Peter Jennings, which I thought was interesting, seems to allow this and even chose the people that said it, so it doesn't say much for him either. But all this hate and anger was directed at Ross Perot. Well, being ever bit the mature, developed individual, he did not react to it in anger. He did not lash out at the individual with anger. He very calmly dealt with the situation and continued on with his explanation, very much in control of himself. Not that it probably wasn't a little upsetting to him when he was first attacked, because that often happens to us in some place where somebody says something very unkind about you. Most of us will usually get embarrassed and just walk away or feel hurt. But there's no need for that either. We need to learn to see things as they are, see that someone was actually attacking you for some irrational reason, and not allow yourself to either get hate, anger build up inside of you, or not allow yourself to feel depression either, because even that is harmful to us. Anytime we're way out of balance one way or the other, then we are causing ourselves problems on the inside, both in our psyche and in our physical body. Okay, another interesting little thing to talk to about here is the aura. Some of you may have heard that we have auras. Lately, the last year or two, I noticed that you go to some of these expos and so forth, and there will be people there taking pictures of your aura. Well, this came about years ago, I believe, at UCLA. Many years ago, they discovered through a Russian technique called Kirlian photography that using certain types of film, they could actually get a picture of some sort of magnetic field of energy around the body. And commonly this will extend out a few inches, maybe up to a foot on some people. And it has different colors in it. And for a while nobody had any idea what this is. Well, let me tell you a little bit about what it is based on what Billy has told me. Everyone has a field of spiritual force around himself. This reflects your intellectual greatness and your thinking about yourself. It's projected by your psyche and your spiritual self. This aura can be interpreted in the field of good or bad, as related to the thinking of the individual. In other words, within the aura, certain colors can be read, and you can see how people respond to things, if they agree, if they think it's a good thing or a bad thing. It reflects failure or successes, because it always radiates in accordance with how you're thinking. if you could see the aura all the time very vividly, like on videotape or something, and you talk to a person and ask them a number of questions and put them into different moods, maybe use lighting and so forth and cause them to feel, you know, lighting and music and get them into a happy mood or a loving mood or a romantic mood and made them feel really good about themselves. And then maybe you said you would see certain things in their aura which reflect that. If you caught that same person in a kind of an angry, upset, frustrated mood, then you would see different colors in the aura. So the aura is capable of reflecting and demonstrating the mood that we are in and the knowledge that we have. Now, when we go to use our aura for healing someone else, remember that the aura actually is a magnetic field. There are waves of electronic impulses in that field. So when you are attempting to help someone else, what kind of mood do you want to be in? If you think you're going to loan your aura, so to speak, and merge your aura with someone else, either with your hands or however you're going to do it, in order to be a beneficial to a sick person, what kind of mood would you want to be in that would cause your aura to be in a certain state? Well, naturally, you'd want it to be in a healthy one, wouldn't you? You wouldn't want to be angry or upset or frustrated or depressed or something, because then that will reflect in your aura. That will reflect in the energy, the magnetic field around your body, and that's no good for somebody else. Likewise, you don't want your ego to get out of control thinking you're really hot stuff and you're going to, I'll fix you up, I can heal anybody, that sort of attitude. I'm wonderful, I'm a psychic, I do this for a living, I know what I'm doing, I read a book on it. You know, whatever it may be. I've run into people like that that think they are just, you know, God's gift to the healing world. All they have to do is be around you and everything will be wonderful. Well, that would be great if it was true, but most time these people aren't at all. They just think, you know, they do whatever they're going to do, and if you don't respond, they say, well, it's a problem with you. You know, there's something wrong with you that normally works. I don't understand it. So we do have an aura. It is a magnetic field. It does reflect our feelings and thoughts. It also reflects our intelligence. It also radiates the reflections of things like love, hate, satisfaction or dissatisfaction. You can read greed, envy, vice, passion, grievance, despair, doubt, revenge, need, which is a biggie in our society, misery, courage, fear, loyalty, humility, happiness, understanding, balance, energy, and realization. All of these things can be determined and read in an aura once a person is astute and knows exactly what to look for. So an aura is a reflection of how you're thinking at the time and a reflection of the knowledge, the intelligent knowledge that is within you. If you want to have a little fun with that sometime, get a picture of your aura taken. I believe it's there are certain Polaroid films that capture it, but you want to make sure that, that it's not being faked. I've seen some people that are just taking lights and flashing lights right onto your body and causing whatever colors to come out just for kind of entertainment value. But if you get an opportunity to actually have it done with someone who has a good process, who knows what they're doing and is using the right equipment, it can be very fascinating to actually see your aura. There are many psychic people who can see your aura, whose eyes, they are tuned to sensitive frequencies in the air, and they can actually see your aura in certain conditions. And if you can find someone like that, who that you can trust to be honest and so forth and not try to, like, you know, just hustle you for some money, find someone like that who knows what they're really doing and have them tell you all about your aura, the colors, how thick it is, how far it extends out from the body. Learn to understand a little bit about it, and then perhaps you can maybe learn to even see your own aura. Then you would know more about yourself all the time and be able to know how you're responding. Well, here's an interesting idea for you. I got another thought for you. Imagine what it would be like if we could get everybody on the planet now to listen to all these ideas, to learn how to meditate, to study and learn more about themselves, to use meditative immersion to develop and learn about themselves and start reprogramming their thoughts, to learn new knowledge about things and put it into your spiritual self so your personality and character changes. At a certain point, suddenly integrity is going to go up, isn't it? Pretty soon there's far less concern for the material things in life. There's less worry. There's less need and fear. Suddenly everybody's kind of reasonably happy and getting along well. Now, what would it be like if the whole world thought like that? My, my. Well, just think about these ideas for a little bit. One, there would be an end to religions. There would be no more war. We would have no more, you know, discord and arguing among ourselves. There wouldn't be any more hunger, because we'd care so much about each other that we would feed each other. Plus, people that are well-balanced and so forth will learn to take care of themselves. Quite often, many of the people in nature that are starving and hungry and so forth, quite often it's because they just don't take any responsibility for their own lives. Or maybe they're just not able. That's also the case. The financial industry would probably disappear, because economics, which is really kind of a lousy idea when you get to thinking about it, it was obviously designed by a handful of rich people somewhere, because it doesn't really serve the lower classes. It was designed by rich people for control. So it's going to have to change. Probably within 50 to 100 years, economics may actually even disappear on the planet, because it's not really an equitable system that provides quality of life for everyone. So we'll come up with a better system somewhere. We would probably stop manufacturing equipment for war. There wouldn't be any demand. We wouldn't be at war with each other if we all looked at each other as spiritual beings on our own path. If prejudice, hate, and anger kind of dissipated and went away, certain businessmen could no longer launch their dirty schemes. The so-called New York bankers and the Bilderbergers and all of these guys, who the big money power people of the world, who really pull the purse strings and make the world jump. Well, they wouldn't have a job anymore. They probably wouldn't even know how to react in life if they didn't have their money. There'd be no more popes, priests, politicians, rabbis, gurus, or bishops. What would they do for a living then? All right, so much for daydreaming about the perfect world. There is one way we can start causing us to our world to move towards a more euphoric state of mind, though. I shouldn't say euphoric. I always used to think of euphoric like we did when we were a kid, when we euphoria, like a city somewhere where everything is perfect. Okay. But there are ways that we can cause, even individually, we can start causing things to get better on our world. And that has to do with our thoughts also. Because I want you to be aware of something else here. Be aware that your thoughts, even though they're not heard audibly, do radiate beyond your aura. They affect plants, animals, and other people around you. Now, what I'm talking about is when you create a thought in your mind, and there's some force put into it, that thought actually creates an electrical charge in your brain. That electrical charge actually, depending on where it comes from in your brain, if it's from your conscious or your spiritual self, has a certain range to it, a distance to it. And when that thought leaves your mind and moves outside of your body, it goes beyond your aura. It affects out into the aura and is reflected in the aura, as you think, but it goes beyond the aura also. So if you think and radiate evil, hate, anger, distrust, whatever, this goes out into the world and it affects everybody around you. There is a consciousness. There is kind of like an open party line, an open telephone line among all people at the subconscious level. For instance, ask anybody who was around Los Angeles during the riots, when tens of thousands of people rose up in anger and were rioting and were burning buildings and, you know, trying to harm one another. Well, that certainly flows out into the consciousness of the people. Many people, I'm sure, if you ask them, could feel that in their own subconscious. It has an effect. There are over 5 billion people right now alive on the planet Earth. All of those people, very few of them, have any respect for the planet itself. They don't even think about the planet. And this has to be a contributing factor into some of the natural disasters and problems that we're going to be facing in the future. Let's think about earthquakes, problem with lower life forms, micro species. Let's think about problems we might have among the animals and so forth. Maybe we're causing some of that. Maybe we get to a point of population where society is so out of control, there's so much anger and war going on, which we're getting close to if you just watch the news today. All of those thoughts out there create so much fear, prejudice, and so forth, they affect all of us. Well, fortunately, you can protect yourself from conscious thoughts, material conscious thoughts, because those are what Billy calls just primary telepathy. It's on the material side of the mind. Thoughts created by the material consciousness and so forth, you can block against them. You can put up strong feelings of self-protection, of happiness, of love and light around yourself. It's a very powerful force. You can tell yourself daily that I am protected by an aura of love and charm and happiness, and it serves well, Because remember, our aura all around us reflects how we think, right? Well, if you are invaded by outside influences and thoughts that affect your subconscious mind and come in and might make you feel just a little down, a little depressed, or a little fearful of all the things that are going on out there, if you feel that trigger happen, if you feel a little down, stop for a few moments, meditate on the idea of power and love, of universal love. Change your aura to being an aura of strong strength, of love and light, and it becomes forceful. You become very powerful. Within just seconds or minutes, you'll feel your powerful feeling of confidence and self-reliance come back, and the outside world then will bounce off of you. You'll be able to perceive it then from a very balanced viewpoint, and you will also perceive the sadness and all the problems and the anger out there more correctly. You will not respond to them then with any sort of hate or anger, but you will also be giving off your own feelings of unconditional love back to these people who are suffering out there. After all, we must start looking at people that, if they're full of hate and anger and whatever they're doing out there, they're very unhappy. And let's don't look at them as something to strike back at. Let's look at it as another spirit which has been misled. It's another spiritual person, just like ourselves, who's having problems in life. Even if they may appear to be violent or whatever, these are the people that really need our love and really need our help. These are the people who are out of control. These are the people who need inspiration. These are the people who need our help and our inspiration to show them what is correct, how to live properly. And through ourselves, using ourselves as role models, we can do that. You know, if you find five or six people that are like a gang or something, you could handle a gang. You could talk to people in a gang, explain the concepts we're talking about, of how to develop happy thinking through power of self and meditation and so forth. At first, they're going to laugh at you. You've got to expect that. But if you get a chance to work with these people, slowly there will be a breakthrough. If you can get them to calm down, even start with some simple breathing techniques to just breathe and so forth and calm themselves down. And then maybe separate them a little bit so that their collective consciousness, which contributes to their anger, is dissipated somewhat. Get them alone individually and they lose some of that violent strength. Get them alone and start calming them down, and then start teaching them some things. Provide them with some new knowledge, some new things to think about. Show them some new ways. And over a period of time, you could bring that person back into being a happy, well-balanced person. Think of all people in the world as happy, balanced, spiritual people, because the spirit itself never gets out of balance. It's always in there. It never gets illogical. So think of them as their spirits out there, that they're trapped somehow inside of some sort of body that's gone crazy, that this material body out there is infected like with a spiritual disease. So we have to look at them like they just need some help. And what is help to a person who spiritually is trying to defend themselves? Most common help is just to offer them your unconditional love, your logic, your clarity of thinking, so they can sort their problems out. All right, one other thing I want to touch on here is called power thinking. That's a phrase that Billy uses in his book, Power Thinking. He says, since thoughts can be so powerful and not affect ourselves but the world around us, they are the most powerful form of energy there is. He says, remember that the creation started the whole universe with only a thought, which manifested itself into matter and created all there is. So thought is very powerful. No one can really resist a healthy, purposeful, and strong thought. You know, and in any argument or discussion you get into, the last word is usually the person who has the most clear, well-thought-out, logical statement which brings the argument to a conclusion, the last word on the subject. A good thought is usually filled with what he calls the absolute awareness of the unity with creation. In other words, when you are aware that you are part of creation, that you are connected to it, and you speak from the Spirit, then you are actually speaking with the highest possible logical mind that you can at the time. That's a good thought. Correct power consciousness and positive thinking dissolves all of your difficulties. Well, it does. We've talked about, you know, how you can make yourself feel ill with poor thinking. Likewise, you can also make yourself feel very well with correct thinking. So you also want to learn to control the size of your problems. You know, if you think of them as small, they are. If you start concentrating on a problem and causing it to enlarge and put a lot of energy into your problem, it'll swell up inside of your thinking, kind of like a storm, and it becomes very difficult to knock it down. The strength of thinking and the application of power thinking requires an education. At first it can seem a little difficult because it's new and seems a little bit strange, but you do actually get used to it. You know, actually it's very easy. Once you start the simple and correct ideas in motion, your thinking will kind of begin to flow. Things move very quickly inside of your mind when you actually do something on purpose. The whole instrument of thinking, the whole concept of the way that your mind works will change very rapidly to accommodate new forms of thought. It seems to like it. You know, once you offer your mind some food, your subconscious some food, it takes to it very quickly. All the equipment, you know, associated with the brain, your neural connectors and everything, they all seem to change like an energy level, and they transform kind of like an electric transformer somehow. You get this shot of energy going through your brain. It's just a short time until power thinking takes over and becomes the norm. Now, of course, practice makes a master out of anyone, so if you practice this idea of power thinking, it becomes a habit. Power thinking, of course, is nothing more than the developing of the power of the spirit by continually concentrating and reinforcing thoughts that are correct and logical. And as you do that, you think stronger and stronger about things, and you develop a force of your spirit. You become a power thinker. Okay, end of tape. See you on the other side.